Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Canto 3, Chapter 5, and this morning's verse is text 50. We mentioned text 51 also because the idea is quite similar. Translation reads, you are the original personal founder of all the demigods and orders of different gradations. Yet you are the oldest and are unchanged. You have impregnated the external energy with semen of the total living entities, yet you are unborn. 51 reads similar. O Supreme Self, please give us who are created in the beginning from the Mahatattva, the total cosmic energy, your kind directions on how we shall act. Kindly award us your perfect knowledge. So that we can render you service in different departments of subsequent creation. Several things that these verses are presenting. The main theme is they're submitting themselves as dependent, incapable without the empowerment and the direction of the Lord, and specific to their service, their departmental managers or maintainers. And specific also in these verses is their understanding that these, their service is part of the act of sub-creation of Lord Brahma. So for our creation as well, what the Lord does in the matter of creation is sarga, what Brahma does is visarga, but behind Brahma is the Lord. He can't do anything independently, and the sub-creation is the diversification, like we were discussing the other morning, diversity, unity in diversity. So the diversification of creation, that's Brahma's work, and the demigods are part of that diversification. And they say specifically, as the creation is diversified, so similarly the living entities are diversified. And we're part of those living entities, and because of that diversification, we're not able to do our service properly. So they're wanting the more on the unity side, on being connected to the personality of Godhead. And all of what they do is part of the sub-creation. It's just a subset of sub-creation or secondary creation. It's part of Brahma's work. Brahma's their boss. They answer to him. And ultimately they answer to Lord Vishnu. And so they're offering their prayers to Lord Vishnu as well. They're asking for knowledge, perfect knowledge, and also the potency to do their service properly. And the Krishna consciousness, or the God consciousness, staying clear and focused on Him in the execution of those duties. In a similar way, can a crying child be taken somewhere? Lord Brahma makes similar prayers in the second canto. After his austerities, his tapa, the personality, this is in chapter 9 of canto 2, the personality Godhead manifests, himself before Lord Brahma. Thank you. What a sound. Lord Vishnu manifests himself before Lord Brahma, and Brahma comes before the Supreme Lord. There's the whole of the spiritual realm, not just, you know, the Lord kind of hovering in space somewhere. The whole of his abode is manifested. And Lord Brahma comes before him, and Lord Vishnu requests Lord Brahma to take a benediction from him. And very cleverly, Brahma asks for several. But one of them is that when he does his act of creating, that he not succumb to the false ego of thinking that he's the creator. Nice, huh? Because the tendency is, when we do some service, we're thinking, you know, I'm the doer of the service. Like this discussion yesterday about false ego, or fruitive mentality. So I and mine accompany the soul even when we're practicing devotional service. We're still thinking of I'm the doer and this is mine. So as Brahma is praying like that, the demigods are similarly praying like that. Not in the same explicit language, but their language is, please give us the intelligence, please give us the ability, so that we can, by your empowering and your gifting us with these things, we can carry out our service properly. By your grace, by this descending mercy arrangement. So another part of what these two verses are doing, in fact, embedded in each one of the prayers that they're offering, is something that specifies the uniqueness of the personality of Godhead, or glorifies Him, separating Him from anyone else. So there are many names of the personality of Godhead that are identifying those characteristics of His, that indicate His uniqueness, His distinction, His supremacy, His almightiness. So, by honoring Him in that way, not only it's setting Him apart from us, He's the object of our worship and we're the worshiper, but it's also distinguishing Him from anyone else, because there aren't others that are of this same unique character or characteristic. In verse 50, the uniqueness here is that same as yesterday's verse, everyone is born from him, but he is unborn. Or saying the same thing differently, he's the source of everything, but he has no source. So that's the absolute truth, by definition, is that from which everything comes. So you are that source from which everything comes, but you have no source. Lord Brahma does something, and he's the source of something, but he's not. He has his source, and even those things that come from him that he's empowered to create or generate, they have their prior existence. He's an instrument, not the original cause. So they're covering that notion in this way. I'll read the translation again. You are the original, personal founder of all the demigods and all the orders of different gradations, yet you are the oldest and are unchanged. Kutastha is the Sanskrit phrase. Does anybody know where that phrase appears in Bhagavad Gita? Kutastha kashmalam idam. Krishna is asking Arjuna, how has this impurity come upon you? Kutastram kashmalam idam. Kashmala. Anarya jushtam ashvargam. Saying that this behavior is unbecoming of a person of your qualification. How has this impurity come upon you? So, the soul is in the same category, kutastha, or unchanged. Another part of, in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna uses the same phrase or way of describing the soul. The soul, it doesn't undergo change. It's unborn, eternal, ever-existing, undying, and so forth. So the soul doesn't change, but the covering of the soul changes constantly. And as the covering of the soul changes, it appears that the living entity, like Prabhupada makes this explanation, that it appears that the body is growing. But that's the wrong language, actually. Did you know that you're not growing? You're just transmigrating. Transmigrating in the sense that this body that's here at this moment is different than the body that we had before we came to Bhagavatam class. At least some parts of it, some of the cellular composition of this body is a different body. And over a period of 7 years, it's a totally different body. So we're not growing, but the body is changing and we're transmigrating through those. The soul is moving from one body to the next body to the next body. I've heard Prabhupada spend like 10 minutes in a lecture making this point again and again, going over it and going over it and going over it, so it's very clear. The soul is unchanging and the body is changing. We call that growing, but that's because we're identifying with the body and thinking, I'm growing. From a babyhood to boyhood to youth, youth to old age, I'm growing or aging. But the soul isn't aging. The soul isn't growing. There are transformations of body, and the soul is moving through those transformations of body. But the soul is unchanging throughout the whole process. And similarly, Krishna is the soul of the universe. The universe is changing. And the demigods are coming and the demigods are going. And there are a new set of demigods coming and a new set of those demigods going. And another Manu and another Manu and so on. So all those things are changing, but he's the soul of the universe, unchanging. O Lord, you have no source or superior. You're the original Father who has impregnated the material energy, and that material energy is your energy. And the living entities that represent the seed of life, that's your seed. They're your part and parcel living entities. Although you're the source of all birth, you're unborn. We can't say that about anybody else. That they're the source of all births. But their form is unborn. That's unique. The external energy is his own energy. Brahma has the capacity, unique capacity, that he can generate living entities from his own body also. The four Kumaras are manifest in that way. Lord Shiva is manifest in that way. The seven great rishis, they're manifest in that way. Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa are manifest that way. He just expands them from his own body. It's not, you know, husband and wife and then there's offspring. He just expands from his own body. But his capacity to do that is derived from Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And in the case of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, or go back, Mahavishnu, it's his own energy. He's not relying upon something else, as Brahma is relying upon someone else. But it's him and his own energy. And the living entities are impregnated within his own energy. So it's in one sense, it's like, in Sri Brahma Samhita, it's compared like this. There's Lord Vishnu, Mahavishnu, and his internal potency. And her name is also given, Rama Devi. But there's a reflection of Rama Devi, a shadow reflection of Rama Devi. And she also has a name, Chaya Devi. And Mahavishnu sees Rama Devi has some service, but Chaya Devi doesn't have any service. And she wants to serve, but she's has nothing to do. So he feels compassion and wants to give her something to do. And he makes that arrangement just by his glance. And by his glance, living entities are impregnated within Chaya Devi, through carried by his glance, along with the time energy, so that she has something to do. And what does she have to do? She keeps the living entities bewildered and very busy, so they have no time for Krishna consciousness. Morning till night, till their time, from the time they're born till the time they die, they've got stuff to do. She keeps them really busy. As long as it's distant from the Supreme Lord, she keeps them away from the Supreme Lord. Like a very fitting metaphor, like a person in charge of a prison. And the warden of the prison, is their program is to keep those criminals away from the rest of society. I mean, ideally to reform them, but until they're reformed, keep them far away from the innocent, law-abiding citizens. So, Chaya Devi keeps the living entities away from the Supreme Lord because in relation to him, they'll make offense. So she keeps them away. But it's the point is, specifically, it's his own energy. Brahma is close, but it's not the same. And other than Brahma, nobody can, from their own body, just produce living entities. You'll think about somebody and then, boom, there they are. It's described in the beginning of the third canto of the Bhagavatam that when Swayambhuva Manu and his consort were simultaneously produced, they weren't like little babies and then they grew up and then they became, you know, adults. They were adult when they were manifest. And they were, because, you know, he needed a Manu right away. So, boom, there's Manu, Swayambhuva Manu. And boom, there's his wife. And, you know, we didn't even really need a marriage because it was already set up. in producing children, it was husband and wife producing children. Devahuti and Prasuti and so on. Uttanapada and Priyavrata, two sons and three daughters. So Krishna does essentially the same thing, or Lord Vishnu does essentially the same thing, but without any external agent. He doesn't need a wife. it's his own energy. It's not a minor distinction, it's a major distinction. I'll tell a little Prabhupada story in this connection. I've heard this from Rabindra Sarup Prabhu several times. When Rabindra Sarup Prabhu is now a GBC member and one of the best writers in ISKCON, but when he was much younger, came in contact with Krishna consciousness while he was in college. He was married, and I don't think when he first met Prabhupada that he had a child yet, but he's had three children, and they're nice devotees. So, Srila Prabhupada was going to be visiting Philadelphia, where Rabindra Sarup became the temple president while he was still in college. And Rabindra had the idea, it would be nice if Prabhupada could meet my PhD professor. And because his PhD was in philosophy of religion. PhD in religion. Philosophy professor. He arranged the meeting, so Prabhupada came, and in the room there's Rabindra, the professor, and Srila Prabhupada. And practically the first thing that the man says, his professor, said was, "How can you worship a terrible person like this character, Krishna, who engages in extramarital affairs with other men's wives?" That's where it started. And Rabindra thought, oh. He felt like disappearing under the rug and just, here's this professor. I thought he would be nice and respect Prabhupada. Then he said that without batting an eyelash, Prabhupada immediately replied, Krishna is not the debauchee, you are the debauchee. And the man said, I don't. He said, oh yes, you do. He said, because all of creation is the energy of God, and you've taken one part of the creation, the energy of God, and tried to make yourself the enjoyer. You say, this is my lawful wife, but actually she belongs to Krishna, and you're enjoying her. The man didn't know what to say. Because he was theistic, he wasn't an atheist, but he was like, you know, this is irreligious, what Krishna has done. So Rabindra said, when he heard this, it was like triple pain. It was, now this man is offending Prabhupada. Second is Prabhupada's upset. But the third thing was, the thing that he said to the professor then also applied to him. Because, you know, he said, I was thinking, as Prabhupada was speaking, I'm married, and I love my wife. I'm not exploiting my wife. I'm not, you know, running around with other women. I love my wife. But Prabhupada just said, and I accept his words, but, you know, I'm a debauchee because I'm married to my wife. And he said that night he couldn't sleep at all from having offended Prabhupada. And then, but this other thing, you know, how, I'm a debauchee, and well, how do I correct this situation? And it wasn't until, like, it was just before Mangalarti, that, and he hadn't slept all night, that it came to him what the real issue was. The real issue was that he wasn't seeing his wife as the property of Krishna. He was seeing, this is my property. That was Prabhupada's point. And why was he not seeing, although philosophically he didn't have an issue, that everything belongs to Krishna, he had issues with Krishna. It's actually, I want to be the enjoyer, and instead you're the enjoyer. And I may do my service, but, you know, it's not just I want to do my service, I want to be the enjoyer. This question that you were speaking about, fruitive mentality. And it's because what's behind the fruitive mentality is I have an issue with Krishna. And I need to resolve my issues with Krishna before I can see my wife as Krishna's property and see all things as Krishna's property and relate accordingly. So the demigods are recognizing this unique position of the personality of Godhead. And because of his unique position, he alone can give them the capacity to do the service that is meant for satisfying him alone. O Supreme Self, please give us, who are created in the beginning from the Mahatattva, the total cosmic energy, your kind directions on how we shall act. Kindly award us your perfect knowledge and potency so that we can render you service in the different departments of subsequent creation. I'm going to read part of the purport. The Lord creates this material world and impregnates the material energy with living entities who will act in the material world. All these actions have a divine plan behind them. The plan is to give the conditioned souls who so desire a chance to enjoy sense gratification. But there is another plan behind the creation, to help the living entities realize that they are created for the transcendental sense gratification of the Lord and not for their individual sense gratification. This is the constitutional position of the living entities. The Lord is one without a second, and he expands himself into many for his transcendental pleasure. All the expansions whether they be Vishnu Tattva, Jiva Tattva, or Shakti Tattva, are different offshoots from the same one Supreme Lord. The Jiva Tattvas are separated expansions of the Vishnu Tattvas, and although there are potential differences between them, they are all meant for the transcendental sense gratification of the Supreme Lord. Some of the Jivas, however, wanted to lord it over the material nature in imitation of the lordship of the personality of Godhead. Listen to this sentence. Regarding when and why such propensities overcame the pure living entities, this is the fall of the Jiva question. It can only be explained that the Jiva Tattvas have infinitesimal independence, and that due to misuse of this independence, some of the living entities have become implicated in the conditions of cosmic creation and are therefore called Nitya Baddhas, or eternally conditioned souls. And that's all he says. So we won't entertain any discussion on that topic. The expansions of Vedic wisdom are also give the Nitya Baddhas, the conditioned souls, a chance to improve. So there's a creation for rectification, and then there's the Vedas for rectification. And those who take advantage of such transcendental knowledge gradually regain their lost consciousness of rendering transcendental living service to the Lord. The demigods are amongst the conditioned souls who have developed this pure consciousness of service to the Lord, but who at the same time continue to desire to lord it over the material energy, fruitive tendency. Such mixed consciousness puts a conditioned soul in the position of managers of the affairs of this creation. So if you want to become a demigod, just continue devotional service, but don't try to become pure. But if you hear the message of Bhagavad Gita properly, then you'll understand, oh, that's not a good program. Should become pure. The demigods are entrusted leaders of the conditioned souls, as some of the old prisoners in government jails are entrusted with some responsible work in prison management. So the demigods are improved conditioned souls acting as representatives of the Lord in the material creation. Such demigods are devotees of the Lord in the material world, and when completely free from all material desire to lord it over the material energy, they become pure devotees and have no desire but to serve the Lord. Therefore, any living entity who desires a position in the material world may desire so in the service of the Lord and may seek power and intelligence from the Lord, as exemplified by the demigods in this particular verse. In other words, they're not asking for pure devotional service, they're asking for power and intelligence. They can do their lording it over, controlling the material energy program in service to the Lord. And Prabhupada quotes 15:15, Bhagavad Gita. What's that verse? Yes, you're saying it so fast. Specifically is situated within the heart of the living entity, sarva shichaham riddhi sannivishto, matak smritir gyanam. Now Krishna is supplied, from within the heart is supplying knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. In this case, the demigods are not approaching Paramatma, they're approaching Lord Vishnu, in either his Garbhadakshayi or Mahavishnu form. most likely Garbhadakshay Vishnu form, and praying for the capacity to carry out their service. So we can follow their example. Ideal is to pray to the Supreme Lord for pure devotion. But they have some desire for service, and we also have some desire for service. We should have some desire for service. And there's the external form of that service, which we should do very carefully because it's for Krishna. We're using our senses, knowledge acquiring, working senses, in service to Krishna, and thereby purifying them. And this is the end of the chapter 5. This is the last verse in the whole chapter. So I'll end there and see if there's some discussion. Yes?
Maharaj, when a pure devotee, a special master, cultivates devotees, there is there are all ranges of people. Some of them may be like these demigods, and they're very strongly rooted like that, that mentality. Is it that the spiritual master tries to make everybody a pure devotee, or he sees that some of these people may be engaged in ways which will not really pure devotional service, but they support in this form, like the outer things, like the demigods, administrative activities? Does a spiritual master think like that?
Well, even the demigods, the goal is to come to that stage of pure devotional service. There's some recognition of an individual's willingness, and according to their willingness, according to the propensity, then they're so engaged. A scriptural reference for this is in Hari Bhakti Vilas. Hari Bhakti Vilas is a book composed by Sanatan Goswami, compiled by Gopal Bhatta Goswami, and is describing the rituals or the how to do everything in devotional service. At the very last verse in Hari Bhakti Vilas says, or towards the end, it says all of the information that's been presented in this text needs to be directed by a bona fide spiritual master and applied to an individual according to their faith and their capacity. So something that may apply to one person out of Hari Bhakti Vilas may not apply to another person. That's also something that's in Hari Bhakti Vilas, depending upon their capacity or their faith. I'll give two examples. I think I've given these examples here in the past. One was in relation to deity worship, when there's one scriptural indication, direction, that says when the deity is broken, there's a procedure how to take the deity to the river or to the ocean and put the deity at rest, or, you know, and then carve another deity and install the other deity. So there's some description like that. But there's also, in the same Hari Bhakti Vilas, a description that says that when one becomes very advanced in deity worship, it becomes something like the parent and the child, where they treat the deity in that very spontaneous way. So there's no question of, let's say a child gets a broken finger. You take the child and go throw the child in the river or the ocean and get another one. parents aren't going to do that. So, depending upon one's faith, one does this or does that. We had this situation where in Australia there was a Radhakrishna deity. I forget which temple. Melbourne, maybe. It's one of the temples. Radhakrishna deities that were installed during Prabhupada's time. And because they were installed during Prabhupada's time, the devotees were very attached to the deity. But in the course of the years and years and years, where Krishna is holding the flute, his thumb broke. And so they didn't know what to do. They consulted, they repaired the thumb. But over a period of time, because it was weak, from time to time the thumb would break. So, you know, this issue arose because it happened again. So the thumb broke. So what should we do? So the whole yatra brought the matter to the GBC. So here's the GBC going over this, you know, this principle, that principle. And it got resolved by the final thing. Because when I was a very new devotee, like, you know, at the first week that I was living in the Boston temple, something happened to the deity, and Prabhupada had instructed them what to do. So I was with a devotee named Krunamoya, and we took Subhadra in a burlap bag loaded with rocks and took her to the Charles River and, you know, into the Charles River. And another Subhadra appeared. And that was under Prabhupada's direction. But in other cases, Prabhupada directed that the deities should be repaired. And both are authorized within the Vedas, so it has something to do with, you know, the evaluation of the qualification of the individual. So there's the, like the smarta, that for smartas there's no question. There's only one thing to do. You discard the deity, have another deity. There's only one thing. But there's another standard, depending upon one's level of Krishna consciousness. Another example was in our New York congregation, there was a Bengali woman whose husband died. And they were, you know, nice congregation members. And she wanted to do the proper procedure for observing the decease of her husband. So she wanted to sponsor the feast for the devotees at the temple. But then there was this consideration, how many days had to pass before she could come to the temple and come before the deity. So she asked me, you know, what should I do? And I consulted with some devotees that were very knowledgeable from Hari Bhakti Vilas, and the answer was the same, depending upon the faith of the individual. They can follow that smarta regulation, because, you know, if you're in an unclean state, you don't come before the deity. But how are you going to become clean? You come before the deity. And how many people attend our temples are unclean of one way or another way of being unclean? So for her faith was actually, you know, to maintain that smarta rule. So, you know, she sponsored the feast and didn't come. She didn't even, like, stay out in the hall and not come into the temple room. She just didn't come to the temple. But it would be perfect. It's not the pujari. It's just in the hall before the deity. She could certainly come in that condition. So whatever the number of days, it, you know, after her husband's decease. According to faith. So, like Krishna's indication is in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the stages, if you can't do this, we can't. So one might encourage, as Prabhupada did, in the very early days, when people were accustomed to smoking cigarettes, for example. His instruction was, just chant one, or smoke one in the morning and one in the evening. Regulate. Because that was their capacity. They couldn't just give it up and take lots of prasadam and be sure you're there for the kirtan. Purify yourself so that you can come to a higher standard. But the goal is to come to that higher standard. So the goal is clear, and the level that one may be initially engaged may be less than that higher standard, just as Krishna is doing. And very much depends upon the capacity of that spiritual leader to hold the faith and bring that person forward. That's true in any case, whether one is in the inner circle or the outer circle. But it's especially difficult in the outer circle, because then it looks like everything's getting watered down in that outer circle. But those persons need to understand, is this preparation for that coming to that next stage? So like say, just people that just come to the temple or come into the association of devotees, and just do some service, although they're not sadhakas. There's certain services they can't do, but some services they can do, and that's they're encouraged. Gradually, come to a higher platform. Anything else? You're making it really easy for me this visit. I just got lots of questions. Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai.